You know, I'll just jump really quickly into Andreessen Horowitz. I don't want to take too much time away from Aaron, who's got a very interesting presentation for the audience. So a little bit of background on us. We're a venture capital firm that's based in Silicon Valley. We're about 6 years old. We take a long view approach on innovation where we look at a few different things that we think are interesting around how new companies are both born and then how they approach the market. And one of those things primarily is how, you know, the market makeup and fit of the founder and their specific knowledge. But the other piece that we tend to look at is there a protectable part of the business specifically around a few areas? And one of those that we think is pretty critical inside of software specifically is network effects. And so I'm not going to steal Aaron's thunder, but I will get into the reasoning behind, you know, why we invested into Lookout, and that is because they took a network approach in how to identify threats and then how to then bring in partners to help increase the strength of that network through their API. And Aaron's going to do a great job of kind of explaining that. The other piece is they've done some pretty seminal work in how threats are moving now from the desktop and from the laptop to the mobile ecosystem, as we've seen a proliferation of internet traffic and software being built on these new platforms like iOS and on Android. Obviously, the threatscape has now moved over to mobile as well. And with that, Lookout has been one of the leading companies in identifying how to see these threats before they become something that's a major scale phenomenon, and also protecting against future threats as well by using the data and analysis that they have through their research. And then distributing that research in a software format that allows their partners to take advantage of that. And so I'm very proud to have Aaron here with us, and he'll do a great job of telling a story about a very recent newsworthy event where Lookout was at the center of that. Here's Aaron Cockrell.
Thanks very much, Nate. So, cheers, thanks. So I wanted to talk you through what's happened relative to security in the mobile world. Now, I know this is predominantly around content protection, so I'm going to be talking more about how you protect mobile devices and what we do in that area and what we've learned. But I think that you'll understand by the end of this that that's integral to ultimately protecting content from two different perspectives, which I'll talk about. So let me set the stage by explaining what the environment's like when you're trying to protect mobile devices. And I believe that you guys will be pretty familiar with this type of scenario, which is the world has changed. Your data center is now a cloud. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you've adopted Salesforce.com or Workday or whatever. You may have, but it equally means that you've now had to make all of your, what is on-premise and what was behind your original perimeter, increasingly available to the internet, therefore on the cloud, okay? And the network that people are accessing that by is increasingly not yours. It's like the Starbucks Wi-Fi. It's the free airport Wi-Fi that I was using on the way down here from San Francisco. It's not your network, which is increasingly scary. And the devices are not yours anymore any longer. Increasingly, the devices are wearables, are phones, laptops. They're no longer managed laptops. Is this resonating with you guys? The other problem that we have is that the latest, hottest apps are made like in someone's garage. They're not, well, they may have been funded by A16Z, but that's after they get out of the garage. Initially, they're often done by anyone that's got a Mac or a laptop and a Wi-Fi, and you've got a world distribution network for those apps. So what's been the response of IT? Typically, the response of IT has been to lock access out, to restrict the users, and quite honestly, we think that that's probably the wrong way to go. But what's been happening is, you've been speaking about it today already, you manage the devices with MDM-type scenarios, you lock down access to the devices, you restrict what they're able to do, and then, of course, the users start to get very frustrated because, let's face it, for everyone, these are personal devices. All of these mobile devices you use as much as your corporate email mechanism as you do as for your digital camera. Okay. So if we all agree that that's the scenario that we're facing at the moment, then you'll start to understand why these devices have become far much more appealing for hackers to attack. So if you think about it, they're more personal, which means that there's a lot more personal and relevant data on them. In addition, the person carries with the device with them all the time. You don't carry your laptop with you all the time. And the device will even tell you where it is with a GPS locator and so on. So they really are problematic devices from a security standpoint. Let me give you an example. The other thing is the user interface is equally a problem. So I'm into motorbikes, specifically KTMs, for anyone, they're the orange ones, the faster ones. I'd really like to buy a KTM 500 EXC. So if someone sent me that text, I'm highly likely to hit that link. I don't even notice that images are spelt wrong in the URL. And that's a case where I actually see the URL. When I do banking, and I'm not picking on Fidelity here, if you look at on the mobile image on your left-hand side, I can't tell whether when I'm logging in, I'm going to be using SSL. On the right, using a browser, we've taught users to actually look at whether the little green lock is on and don't enter your password unless the little green lock's there or whatever analogy you use to educate your users. You don't have visibility into that on a mobile device. Equally in email. Now, I wouldn't click this link because I sent myself that email and made the title very clear, Aaron, don't click on the link. But on a mobile device, I can't hover over it and see what the link is. On a regular mail client, I can, or in a browser, I can. So it's not only the fact that these are personal, and it's not only the fact that these are with you all the time and so on, it's also the fact that the user interface restricts your ability to actually implement some, or you know, the user taught security mechanisms that existed in on laptops and PCs and so on. So very challenging devices to secure. And we're seeing this in the real world. So as an example, I think if you're not familiar with it, the statistics are that mobile devices access the internet now more frequently than PCs since 2014. That crossed over in 2014. Mid-2015, KPCB established that people spend more time on their phones than in front of a PC. 51% of the time, and Flurry analysed the usage of those devices to establish that 90% of the time, and it wasn't a rounding error or whatever, that specifically 90% of the time was spent in the apps, not the browsers, which highlights that issue that I showed you of not knowing whether the connection was encrypted. And this one's a little bit more frightening. 67% of the Global 2000 report breaches as a result of mobile devices from Pwnmon. We had to dig into that a little bit to understand it. What's actually happening, there's two major constituents of that statistic. One is having the device be lost and not having the ability to wipe it, or having the user not wipe it and resultant data loss. The other one is attacking the device to exfiltrate credentials. So mobile devices are increasingly used like to authenticate to enterprise systems or business systems, your banking and so on. So they're a source of credentials, and they're also used in second factor authentication. So they're an interesting target from a credential perspective. So I wanted to talk you through a real life exploit that Lookout, my company, as well as Citizen Labs were directly involved in just recently. And in the break, I mentioned that it was available in Vanity Fair. Here's some pictures from the magazine. These are the people that were involved in both researching the exploit and finding the exploit. Well, not Jennifer Lawrence, the people on the dark side. And they're all of our security researchers. So I'll take you through what happened. And in the context of a kill chain rather than in the dramatized, well, it wasn't dramatized, but a better storyteller in Vanity Fair, you probably enjoy reading that one more than listening to me. But I'll put it in an IT context, which is the kill chain that it's been used by the military for a long time to describe how an attack would occur. And then Lockheed Martin more recently made it applicable to cybersecurity attacks. So the first step is reconnaissance, in identifying who the user is and or who you're going to attack. In the mobile or even in cybersecurity, you know, generally IT world, this is about identifying how to contact the user with email or SMS or something like that. That's incredibly easy these days because of tools like Twitter and Facebook and every other social media mechanism. So in this particular instance, the target was Ahmed Mansour. Now, he's a UAE dissident that has been involved in defending human rights. He's been jailed for criticising the government over there or government individuals. And as it turns out, he'd been targeted for surveillance in the past, which I'll get to in a second. So he was the target. The next step is developing weaponization of exploits. So I'm sure everyone in the audience fully understands this, but exploits, what we're talking about here is identifying vulnerabilities in the operating system or the apps that the user uses, and then exploiting those vulnerabilities without, ideally, without anyone knowing about them. So vulnerabilities that no one knows about that you've discovered as a hacker are referred to as zero days, which, again, you guys probably know. So zero days that get you exploits into or give you the ability to take over mobile devices, specifically even Apple devices, are scarce as hen's teeth. Like there was a company in Silicon Valley that August last year, they're called Zerodium. They offered $1 million bounty for a zero day for an exploit for iOS in August. It was claimed in November. No one knows what was done with it. Okay, so they exist, and what I'm about to show you is they're going for a lot of money on the black market as well. So this one, what happened in this scenario, and most people typically think of mobile exploits as an app that the user has to install, like malware. In this particular instance, it was actually JavaScript in a browser, which is even more frightening, because that allows you then a fully remote potential jailbreak of the device, which is, to this point, unheard of. What you next have to do is deliver it. So that's much, much easier on these mobile devices. Like I talked about, you send the person a link and you try and get them to click it. In this particular instance, this is the text that was sent to him, the target, Ahmed. And I don't know if anyone can read that stuff, but what it says is, click this link to understand some of the people that have been attacked for supporting his cause, as I understand it. So, fortunately, Ahmed had actually been targeted by similar tricks. Actually, he was asked to launch a Word document in email on his PC, which resulted in his surveillance being installed on his device. And the people that found that before were the labs that we worked with here. He specifically identified that was a problem and took this screenshot and sent it to Citizen Labs. He sent it off to Citizen Labs, a bloke by the name of Bill Marks, recognized that URL. Bill then clicked on the link from a isolated environment where he thought that he could capture what it might do. It bypassed his isolated environment. Then he realized, oh no, I've got to close this down because I was about to get subject to surveillance from whoever it was, and called the guys at Lookout and said, I need your help understanding this. What they actually found after Bill was able to download it and get everything to us at Lookout was that the initial stage, the first delivery mechanism, was an exploit that leveraged a link on JavaScript in Safari. That link in Safari then enabled two kernel exploits for you to remotely take over the device. Now, what's happening here is there's not only one zero day, but there's actually three zero days involved in this exploit. Three zero days of iOS that get you a remote jailbreak. I just told you that one would get you $1 million at the end of last year. So what that did then was it installed surveillance software. So this is where, you know, installs ultimately the bad stuff. And this was some really amazing software, as well as the exploits. Our head of security, Mike Murray, said, and he's been in the industry for 20 years, he said that there has never been a PC scenario that exploited three in chain, 0 days, and then implemented as advanced software surveillance. For example, you can't just start scanning the file system or be in the network connection or do all of these types of things on a mobile device because the battery dies and then the user is like, what's going on with my phone? That's a telltale, by the way, if your battery's dying fast and then there's a potential bad piece of software on your phone, right? So they did a whole bunch of stuff. They made sure that they didn't use too much battery. They auto-started on reboot, which is, if anyone knows, developing on iOS. You normally can't do that unless you're in the network stack. They re-exploited the kernel every time the device was rebooted to get root privileges. They disabled iOS updates. So if you were exploited, and they didn't even tell you that there was an update ready for iOS, and it self-destructed if the device was tampered with. Pretty impressive stuff. On top of that, if they had to change their command and control servers at any time, they sent the targets an SMS that looked like this. This is literally one. And that information in the link sent the software the new command and control server location and instructions. Really sophisticated attack. Not only that, it was at a kernel level attack. So the other benefit that they were able to derive from that is that every app that sat on top of the encryption layer, they could intercept the content for. So all of your like WhatsApp encrypted transmissions, all of that, that's all sent to them without encryption. So that that applies as much to all the social networking stuff as it does to, for example, if you're using MDM or EMM with containerization. So they bypassed all of that as well. Should give them some credit here, I guess. The company that did that is called the NSO Group. It's an Israeli company that essentially builds cybersecurity surveillance software. They've had over $100 million invested in them from the US. So it's a very interesting company. They claim that they only sell to legitimate customers. But obviously, they choose who is a legitimate customer. And so there's a difficult thing to discuss with them there. Anyway, so that's who they were. Pretty amazing. What was also amazing was Apple patched this in record time. So let me just put that in perspective. It wasn't just iOS. The first exploit was actually Safari, which runs on all Apple devices. And all Apple devices were susceptible. So Apple pulled out all stops and got everything patched within 10 days. They made the patches available within 10 days. And then, as typical in the Apple environment, the uptake of those updates was quite quick. So that was a very good thing. So I wanted to ask a question. Well, firstly, who of you knew about Pegasus before I went through that? So a few of you. And did anyone respond to it? What did you guys do? Anyone? Did you force the update of the devices? Your devices? Yeah? Cool. So we had, because we're working with a bunch of CISOs that had different reactions, we saw everything from, you know, we're not going to react because that costs hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, and we don't think that we're susceptible to that, all the way through to a company that we work with confiscated all of their execs' devices and bought them all new phones. Another company that we work with said, you've got to update your phone within 3 days, and if you don't, we're wiping it. So there were lots of different reactions. And look, I don't want to, make you think that this sort of stuff is getting on everyone's phone. Like, I went through this with my wife and she said, I'm never using my phone again. And then I had to talk her down off the cliff and say, you know, it's completely okay. You're probably not going to get targeted. But, you know, there is a reason to be worried about this stuff, and there is a reason, you know, most companies we find, the challenge that we talk to them about is that they don't have visibility into it. That's the biggest problem right now. So, and all of the indicators are that this is going to become an increasing challenge for us. So Gartner predicts that, you know, attacks like this are going to become increasingly prevalent, that enterprises need to look for solutions like this, and they're really actually now getting us to evaluate, or getting everyone to evaluate what they call MTD tools, which stands for Mobile Threat Detection Tools. That's, you know, they got to come up with a three-letter acronym to describe the next thing. But I'll give you some insight into what we specifically see, and I'll explain in a second how we get this data. But on average, so we have over 100 million sensors gathering, mobile devices with our software installed, that provide us telemetry data about the mobile ecosystem. And we can use that to analyze what the likely impact is to, you know, enterprise orgs. So we literally went through and passed our data according to, we leveraged AS number predominantly to identify global 2,000 companies and looked at how many threats that we saw on those devices that were issues like surveillance, like rootkits, like Trojans, that were doing things nasty, not just installing adware or riskware. And on average, we see about 30 encounters per 1,000. I have no idea why we keep quoting it per 1,000. That's 3%. But for some reason, everyone quotes it per 1,000 devices. Getting specific now, in the retail sector, we saw about 45 per 1,000, 4.5%, a little higher. Specifically, 32 on average, Trojans, 3.2%. Root enablers, 7 of them, and 4 surveillance in every 1,000, okay? And as I said, we're analysing over 100 million of these devices. In the healthcare, it was a little bit worse, and which is interesting about this is that's a highly regulated industry. So in healthcare, we saw, as it shows, 42 Trojans, 4.2%, 1.4% of the devices had root enablers, 0.7% surveillanceware. And financial services, another highly regulated industry, very similar numbers here, roughly the same, just slightly more surveillance. So this is something that's really happening, and it's something that's really happening on both platforms. And by the way, I also don't want to come across like I'm really attacking Apple in this. The numbers are similar, if not more, for Android. It's just that this is the first time this has come out on Apple. Apple do, as I said, an amazing job updating their operating systems, and it's a great ecosystem from a security standpoint, but you can't take a head in the sand attitude to think that just because I'm on that platform, I'm completely safe. So, and it's, I also want to explain that it's not always that type of software, a major cybersecurity attack company or cyber arms dealer attacking you. It can be as simple as regulatory compliance issues or breaches of your internal security policy that are problems. So let me give you another example here. This is a app that I happen to make using a tool, we can get into it later, called appery.io, but that's a different subject. But it's made with a tool that largely you don't need to code with. So any line of business person that wanted to take the time could potentially build an app like this. It leverages widely available APIs, so Google Maps, Salesforce.com, LinkedIn, all that sort of stuff, and it presents it's sort of a summary of what a salesperson might want to know before they go into the meeting. I built it, so it's pretty crappy. It stores all of my passwords for me, so I don't have to read them again, enter them again. And in order to accelerate the performance, because every time I launched it, it would have to go get the data, and that took ages from all the different APIs. So I told, because it's something you can do in these tools, I said, just store everything on FireDB, which is a company that's subsequently been acquired, but a real-time database in the cloud. So if you know what I did, essentially then, I know you're not financial services, but that's just a direct breach of Sarbanes-Oxley. I'm storing my credentials, as well as the corporate CRM data, on an external data store without anyone even knowing. Okay? And I did this without writing more than probably 10 lines of code. And the most complicated ones were copying the strings of the APIs into the API queries once I got authorized from Salesforce to use their APIs. So what I'm highlighting here is that there's lots of great apps that you don't need to be worried about, and they're benign. There are very few, but they exist, pretty nasty things that you also, that you genuinely should be somewhat concerned about, at least at your C-level staff level or, you know, executive team level and so on. I would use role in from a risk management perspective, mobile devices, since they're one-to-one with people, role tends to be a good assessment of criticality. And then there's this gray area in the middle where applications may not necessarily breach Apple's guidelines or Google's guidelines, but the blokes who built them in that garage that I showed you earlier don't know anything about Sarbanes-Oxley or HIPAA or your security policies. So they're not building towards those. There's a, I don't want to pick on individuals here, but there's an app that's awesome on the app stores at the moment that's called Cloud Hub, and it brings together all of the storage facilities, Box, Dropbox, and I know you guys spoke to Box earlier, but Box and Dropbox and all of those storage mechanisms, and then a whole bunch of other APIs like Salesforce. So you can just store whatever you want on there and shuffle it between the resources you need. It's a really neat app, complete breach of most people's security policy. So, and the last thing I wanted to share with you is that it's important that you recognize that the way that you address security on mobile devices is very different than the way that you've addressed it in the past in PCs. As I mentioned before, these devices are limited by battery life. So you can't, for example, install something that's constantly scanning the file system to look for bad stuff. In fact, you can't do that anyway because the APIs into the operating system on iOS and, in part, Android won't let you do that because you're not supposed to play outside your sandbox when you're on those operating systems, which is a great thing. These modern operating systems have that as a benefit. You can't. These devices are constantly connected to multiple networks, and those networks behave differently from a battery consumption perspective, so you've got to be careful about what you use and when you use it, and you're only allowed to do certain things with the network. You can't, for example, insert yourself into all of the network calls because you'll not get published on the App Store, and you'll kill the battery. So there's you can't do the things you would do on devices that are plugged into the wall and plugged into the Ethernet cable that you can do on a mobile device. So what you have to do is you have to treat it differently when it's connecting to secure content, whether that's your external movie type content or whether that's internal corporate type content. You need to assess the device to the extent you can and identify if there's something on it that shouldn't be there. It's jailbroken to be able to rip off DRM, or if it's got malware to collect credentials, whatever it is, then you treat remediation differently. You tell the user what's going on. It's critical because it's a personal device. They need to be involved in any remediation. If they're not, they won't trust you. We didn't get to 100 million users on our platform by telling users that we stuck 304abc.exe in quarantine. You have to take them through the process of a friendly, trusting remediation of their device. But at the same time, you protect the assets from the device, whether that's the content or whether that's the corporate data and so on. So it's a different scenario. It's not about automated remediation like you would do with a typical antivirus product. It's protecting the content and, the, and so on from the device. Then when they remediate, they get access again. So I wanted to leave some time for questions. I'm just about out of time, but I wanted to give you some insight into how we do this. So what we do is we gather all of the apps essentially in the mobile ecosystem for iOS and Android through crawling, through supporting the app stores for vetting for malware, for a whole bunch of methods. We acquire more than 90,000 applications a day, and we analyze them using some typical and some atypical analyses for those applications. Now, we don't have source code, but we do have them decrypted. So we do a bunch of analysis on them. We've analyzed over 50 million applications to date. To put that in perspective, there's 5 million total on Google Play and Apple's App Store. So we've identified every version for many years. And then we give a malware assessment, vulnerability assessment, risk assessment, and then we allow enterprise to build policies to protect themselves from those apps or those devices. Or we provide, and we also provide products to personal users to be able to protect their device. And we even go so far as to provide our protection engines as an SDK that you, for example, could include in your apps that view content, as an example. So I left a very small amount of time for questions, but thank you very much.
Any questions for Aaron? Hands? Hands, touching hands, reaching out. Sorry, I can't help myself. Jesus. No? Aaron, thanks so much. I'm sure people will come and approach you. I hope you're going to stick around for a little bit.
I'll be around tonight. I heard they're giving away beer.
Yeah, excellent. Aaron Cockerell, ladies and gentlemen.